Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Be nice.
I'm always nice.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 9, Intervention. And now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
I'm so excited for us to be able to address this episode, which crosses over with one of your favorite shows, Intervention. Doesn't really.
Yes, it does. And also with one of my former favorite shows, Celebrity Rehab. Mm. Hi, Mackenzie Phillips. Hey, see you, girl.
And one of mine, One Day at a Time, which is a show she was in and something that addicts have to keep in mind, apparently. Anyway, before we get into it, though, we do have some site business regarding scheduling. Starting this week, we are cutting back to a one-a-week schedule, primarily because, you know, the fall TV season has started and we are bombarded with lots of other stuff. And this podcast takes a very long time to prep, so we want to keep bringing it to you, but we're just going to slow down the drip of episodes. We hope you will understand and continue to support us and come to previously.tv and see all of the other content that we are working on, both ourselves and helping to bring to you from our amazing group of contributors.
Indeed.
Okay. Any other site business?
Yeah. There's tree trimming going on in the house beside us here on where we are. So I don't know if the mics are going to pick it up. I guess they will. It's going on and off. So if you hear either a very loud or very low, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I probably can't really scrub it out. So if that's going to bug you a lot.
It's actually not the drone of Brandon's self-righteousness. It is an actual piece of equipment.
It's also not a drone coming to kill us, as far as we know. So that's a plus. So
apologies if it bothers you. Just, you know, skip the episode if tree trimmer killed your dad or something like that.
So, right.
Otherwise, we're good to go.
Yeah. Go to Glarkware, buy the shirts, visit us at previously.tv. Let's get into it. Starting with our C story, Kelly's a fucking model now. So.
No.
Yes. Jackie calls Kelly with amazing news. 17 Magazine saw the proofs from the mother-daughter photo shoot from a couple of episodes ago, and they want Kelly, clip number 2.
For what?
A layout.
They want to see you tomorrow. Can you believe it?
Mom, I have classes. I can't.
You have nothing as important as this.
I don't want to.
Kelly, this is an opportunity most girls would give their eye teeth for. Just go with me on this. At least check it out.
Okay, Mom.
Now, Kelly's attitude, I guess we're supposed to think this is carried over from her trauma from her never before and this season mentioned child modeling days. But like this idea that Kelly would be all take me seriously. I mean, I guess there is some precedent for that from the senior most beautiful episode 2 and her whole eating disorder and whatever. But still her tone on I don't want to it's like, fuck you.
Yeah. It's worse than tree trimmers.
Yeah.
And with that cat butt face and that hair, which continues to baffle.
Yeah.
We don't want you to either.
Yeah. But also, like, it's still an opportunity. Like, just find out what it's about first. Don't be so knee-jerk. I don't want to do it just because Jackie is the one presenting it to you. And all of a sudden, Jackie is your enemy, which also is new this season. Anyway.
Or just say no. And end the conversation. Like,
yeah.
Don't wait to be talked into it. Like, which is it? You want to be the pretty girl or you don't?
Right. And the acting I'll put upon about it is how the rest of the storyline, at least in this episode, is going to go. So Jackie momagers along to Kelly's meeting at 17. This is, by the way, nothing at all like the Gosies on Top Model. I guess since they're recruiting Kelly from a not model pool, that makes sense, sort of. But they're really kissing her ass a lot under the circumstances. And Lisa, the editor, says that it's a campus spread. They're looking for real college girls, not models. And it'll be the same group of girls throughout the year for 4 to 6 editorial stories. And Jackie, in my opinion, is being overly enthusiastic. I get we're supposed to think that she's like psyched that Kelly might be following in her footsteps because she thinks she'll be able to give her tips and stuff. But like Jackie usually has more chill than this. It's weird how over invested she is, like right from the jump to me. What did you think?
Yeah. And also the way that she describes her, like her layout in 17 is totally off in terms of the styles that would have been in, mm-hmm. in her day.
Yeah.
It's like you're not 60, you're in your 40s. So I'm not clear on the saddle shoes concept. And then,
right.
I mean, I will give it to Anne Gillespie. She is really selling that glaze-eyed, mm-hmm. I'm a part of things. And then the manager's like, uh-huh.
Yeah. I will say about the saddle shoes, though, that one of my favorite things to do when I used to work at the public library when I was in high school, like a fucking nerd, was go to the stacks and get out actually old issues of 17 magazine. Because back in the 70s, they were huge. They were like bigger than old Rolling Stone. They were giant. And the photos in there were amazing. And especially in the 90s when I was in high school, like they were very much all of that had come around again. But I on the saddle shoes, I'll say there is a kind of like a shorthand that magazines always use, especially in teen magazines, for like fall, like plaid always comes back in fall.
Yes.
And saddle shoes is a very like back to school looking thing for magazines to do. So I'm willing to overlook that as just, you know, it wasn't necessarily the style, but it was a throwback sort of thing that 17 did when Jackie did it back in the dark ages. Whatever.
Well, yeah, that this is my quibble out of all the things in the Kelly is a model storyline,
yeah.
With that hair. I should, yeah, let's just move on.
But maybe Jackie feels she has to be extra enthusiastic because Kelly is giving Lisa, the editor, nothing to the point of like kind of being rude about it. But it's also cringy as fuck with Jackie reciting the details of her own college modeling days until Lisa has to ask her to leave. And when Jackie's gone, Lisa notes that Kelly doesn't seem that excited about it. Kelly says she is, sounding like she's not, and tells Lisa about her traumatic child modeling past, what it did to her mother. Lisa says this is not a high pressure situation, though, and that they'll have fun, but totes no presh. And Kelly says she will think about it. And later, Brandon shows up for dinner with Jackie and Kelly, and Jackie justifies my love for her immediately with this clip number 3.
Sorry I'm late.
It's okay. We went ahead and ordered some nibbles.
It's such a cute thing for her to say.
I know.
It's like such a mom thing to be like, it's fun, you know, like doing the Hillary debate shoulder shimmy. We ordered some nibbles.
Uh-huh. And then she got onion rings. That's top-notch nibblery.
Agreed.
Right there.
Brandon wants to know what they're celebrating, and Jackie calls Kelly America's hottest new face. Brandon is happy for her and asks why she didn't tell him. Kelly didn't want to make a big deal about it, and immediately Kelly is a shithead in clip number 4.
I still have no idea what I'm going to order.
I don't even know why I'm bothering. I can't eat anyway.
Kelly, nobody said anything about your weight.
Mom, when's the last time you saw a chubby cover girl?
Ladies, time out, please. Time. Why don't we change the subject, huh?
Why don't we stay on the subject of why Kelly is such a coos? Because Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, then don't do it.
Right.
If you want to eat whatever you want, don't be a model.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cinchy.
Yeah. Also, Jackie's right. No one said anything about her weight. They obviously know what she looks like because they saw her in person. Like, there's no reason to think.
You're not chubby. Ugh.
Yeah.
Obviously, no one in the current, like, season 5 writer's room remembered that she got geezed out on Guy Fieri 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
Geezed.
Although, I mean, I guess it's good that they're sort of making it clear that, like, those impulses are still in her, but it doesn't seem like they're really doing it in a very thoughtful way, and so it just seems sort of slapdash. Like everything else, later, Kelly and Brandon show up the Peach Pit, where Steve is already sitting with Andrea and Jesse. Steve jokes that they can't get their own private table, and Kelly makes this piss face, which I made a gif of. You can see it in the visual aids at previously.tv. Like, if you don't want to run into anyone you know, fucking go somewhere else. Los Angeles is enormous. It's very easy to solve this problem. What is wrong with you? I mean, I know it's TV and they only have four permanent sets, but Jesus. Anyway, there's talk of all the mega burgers that they used to eat in high school, but when it comes time to order, clip number five.
You want anything, huh?
Some hot tea. You
take out that boy, here we go.
What?
Kelly's not eating anymore.
Brandon, do me a favor, don't turn into my mother.
That's the first time he's been accused of that. Usually he's everyone's
and
dad.
And believe me, that would be such an improvement that we'd all get the bends. Yeah, really Team Brandon for once.
For once. Yeah. Kelly, stop making that face. It'll stay that way. Moving on to our B story. Donna, Ray, Claire, David, dating stuff. Who wants a glimpse of Ray Pruitt's home life? Well, too bad, because here it is anyway. Ray Pruitt's poor mama. Can only afford
one
tea.
What is her name? Loretta?
Earlene? I don't know. I'll look it up when the first clip starts playing. It's Caroline McWilliams from something. I'll look that up too. Anyway, she's in a bathrobe smoking at breakfast, and she's on TV, which means she is, that shorthand for she's trash. And she has a southern accent. Yikes. Ray is lucky she can read, although I guess we don't have any evidence of that either. She's very interested in his romantic life, like maybe in a creepy Mare Whittingham / Evan Peters in American Horror Story Coven way, in clip number six.
I heard you come in last night. What was it, about 4 o'clock in the morning?
Didn't check my watch.
You out with that Donna girl again?
No, just hanging out with the guys.
I tell you about priorities. You can't just leave a girl hanging, waiting by the phone.
She was studying, Mama. She goes to school, remember?
Of course I remember. What I especially remember the most, though, is that she lives in Beverly Hills.
Will you just let me eat my breakfast in peace, please?
Will you just tell me one thing, please? What part of Beverly Hills is she from?
I don't know. What's the difference?
Only about a million or two. You see, the really rich folk live north of Sunset Boulevard. Everybody else is just trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Well, I am not after Donna's money, Mother.
Of course you're not. You listen to your mama. It's just as easy to fall in love with a rich girl as it is a poor one.
I like the gender flip on how that line usually goes, but yeah, back up. Luann,
and
first
I've
of all.
Always depended on the kindness of Martins. The fuck?
So her name is Luann. This is, of course, before the Countess reclaimed it as classy in the 2000s.
Oh, is that how she did it? Interesting.
Question mark. Caroline McWilliams credits where you may know her from. She was on Soap for a number of episodes in the 70s. And also, Sarah, do you know her other big credit?
No.
Benson.
Oh, of course it is.
She was a series
That's
regular
right.
on that show. So she, and also just a note, since I'm on her IMDb page, we lost her. She passed away in 2010. So let's try and not
all
be
those
too mean.
Morleys she's smoking in her bathrobe.
Right. Over to David and Claire. The whole handcuff thing didn't really work out, but in case we forgot that Claire, a freak, she tells David that she has an idea, asks if they have a blank tape, grabs one that contains an air check of her and Donna that they can tape over, and proceeds to start seducing David while the camera rolls. And please go to the visual aids for the gif that I made of this, because as they start fooling around, somehow this shot of the camera just sitting there manages to look judgmental. Like, even the camera's like, oh God. To look at the gif and tell me if I'm wrong. Moving on. Kelly asks, Kelly asks how Donna is with the sleeping arrangements at the apartment, referring to David and Claire. Donna says she's fine with it and actually seems like she is. It helps that she has a boyfriend herself. And also, this is when she tells Kelly that she dumped Griffin. Felice doesn't know yet and thinks that Donna is bringing Griffin to dinner at the Martins tomorrow. So Donna shows up at her parents' house in the afternoon, just as Felice is setting the table for an extremely fancy dinner. Fish forks and aspic are involved. Sounds fun. Donna tries to suggest to...
Somewhere my grandmother twirled in her grave with joy.
Sorry. Donna tries to suggest to Felice that this dinner is a bad idea, but then admits that she and Griffin broke up. Felice is disappointed since Griffin was so perfect for her, as they discuss in clip number 7.
Mom, please stop trying to arrange my life.
Well, I'm not trying to arrange your life. I just want you to be happy.
I am happy. I'm very happy. In fact, I have another boyfriend.
Oh, you do? What's his name?
Ray. Ray Pruitt.
Daddy plays golf with a Pruitt. Jefferson Pruitt, the stockbroker.
I don't think they're related.
Okay, well, what's your Pruitt like? Where's he from? Did you meet him at school?
Yeah, I guess.
Great. What year is he in? What's he studying?
He's not in school anymore.
He graduated?
Not exactly. He's a musician.
Ah. Concert pianist, no doubt.
No, Mom. He plays the guitar and he writes some great songs.
Well, where is this brilliant troubadour from?
Reseda.
Reseda?
Mother, you are such a snob. I can't believe this.
No, I'm not a snob. I'm just concerned about you. I mean, do you really know anything about this boy? Do you know anything about his family, his background?
I know that he's sweet, and he's nice, and he's cute, and I like him.
Well, in my book, that's just not good enough.
Well, in my book, it is.
Ooh.
Okay. Honey, I'm sure he is a lovely young man. As a matter of fact, why don't you invite him to dinner tonight? Daddy and I would love to meet him.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of short notice.
Well, honey, if he's as special as you say he is, I'm sure he'll go out of his way for you.
Oh, Felice. Queen. Never change.
Setting the trap. Oh, my God.
I love that she's, like, buttonholing him. There's this famous story about this guy who's on, like, the 1963 Mets who were terrible. And, like, the guys were basically hired to be characters versus good players because, no. Mm-hmm. But there was this player called Choo Choo Coleman, and he's being peppered with questions in a press conference because he had just gotten married. And they're like, Choo Choo, we heard you just got married. What's her name? What's she like? And Choo Choo Coleman goes, her name is Mrs. Coleman, and she likes me. I've always loved that story, and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I really wanted Donna to be like, this name's Ray, and he likes me.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really like her.
No. Well, at this point, I think he does like her. Yeah. He's just bad at liking her. He doesn't know how. He has problems. Yeah. But, oh my God, Felice. Reseda. I mean, it's
there,
in the valley.
There will be a gif. There will be a gif.
It's even scummier
than
Van Nuys.
It's a full body Reseda. It's so good.
Yeah. She's like clearly already sharpening her knives for this guy. And this is a total setup, of course. And after she walks out of the room, Donna is left with the older African-American housekeeper, Lucille, who gives her this look, which you can see in the visual aids. It's gorgeous. And Donna's like, he's nice, really. And Lucille manages to stifle the girl, please, you know, is right on the tip of her tongue and just says, tell him to wear a tie. It's gorgeous. I love Lucille.
I know. Anyway, oh, Lucille.
The next day, Claire and David are starting to fool around when David asks her to get the tape so that they can watch it now, but it's not there, stuff. Then the Martins are tensely waiting for Ray. This couch, okay, they're supposed to be like rich and classy, but this couch is like straight out of a Van Nuys porn shoot. It's like this off-white leather. I put it in the visual aids because it's so tacky. Anyway, while they wait, Dr. and Mrs. Martin want to look at this tape that she brought over. Oh my God, which tape stuff? And also, why would she bring an air check? Like, has she not done anything like substantial by this point? This is her only time on camera. Whatever. Just as Dr. Martin's about to put the tape in the VCR, Ray shows up. He has brought flowers and an ingratiating smile, which is pitiful. But Felice is immediately against him and also an incredibly terrible host in clip number 8.
Mom, Dad, I'd like you to meet Ray Pruitt.
Mr. Martin, nice to meet you.
It's Dr. Martin.
Sorry, these are for you.
Oh, sweet. Thank you. You shouldn't have.
I'm sorry I'm late. I took a wrong turn on San Isidro.
We're just happy you made it.
Have a seat. We're about to watch a tape of Donna on television.
Daddy, not now.
I agree with Donna. Let's save that for after dinner. Might give us something to look forward to.
It's Dr. Martin. So tacky.
Oh, my God. I am chilled to the bone in the shade of Felice. To the bone.
Yeah. Like, it's clear that she knows Ray isn't someone that she would have any reason to impress, so she's barely treating him like a person. Like, if one of her swells called him Mr. Martin, she would let it go, but not Ray. So tacky. Miss Manners would spank her so hard for that shit. Dinner at the Martins is, of course, silent and uncomfortable, so naturally, Felice has to call attention to it in clip number 9.
You hardly touched your appetizer, Ray.
Not everyone likes Asbeck.
Including me.
She just makes it to torture us.
All right, Donna.
It was very good. I'm just not a big fan of tomatoes.
Well, I'm sure you'll love the lamb. Although it may be slightly overcooked.
Again, so tacky. Like, he already apologized for being late. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And also, he's totally on to her.
Yeah.
And he knows that Dr. Martin thinks that she's being a shit, so occasionally he, like, shoots a look at Dr. Martin. Like, yeah. I sort of love that Dr. Martin is always like, what can I say?
She's Sarah, a tigress in the sack. What is Asbeck? Like, I don't even know.
It's like Jell-O, but savory.
Ugh. That sounds revolting.
Yeah, my grandmother, who was the Wartonian term, I guess, would have been a striver.
Okay, like, right.
There was really no reason for Aspic, but she didn't. I guess if you serve Aspic, you can't have been from South Philadelphia. Like, settle down.
Right.
But okay. Yeah, it was like tomato Aspic with little chunks of chicken salad floating in it. It's, if you have texture trigger problems, it is not for you.
That sounds horrible.
You really got to nail, you know, the mix of ingredients and get the right Aspic ratio.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Could have put a bell on that one for how much we heard it coming down the road.
While we're up.
Anyway.
Department of Dad Jokes, honorary chair, Sarah D. Bunting will also include that Felice is putting the ass back in Aspic.
Speaking of Felice, she then asks about Ray's background. He is from San Bernardino, though his family came from Oklahoma, and she leads that when they were in Houston, they met a lot of people from Oklahoma who were in the oil business, but Ray says his family aren't, other than an uncle who is a rigger, and Dr. Martin is, as usual, much nicer than Felice in clip number 10.
What does your family do?
Daddy.
A little of this, a little of that.
Well, that's exactly how my family started. Are you in school?
No, sir, I work construction.
Ray's a musician, Daddy.
Really?
Don't try and build me up, Donna. Like, the fact is, I don't really come from much, and I don't know where I'm going. If that's a problem for you, I'm sorry, but that's all there is.
Ooh.
Well done, Ray.
Yeah, I mean, he should.
I don't know how you get through dessert after that mic drop, but exactly. Shut up, Felice.
She actually looks like she might be a tiny bit chastened by this remark. Particularly when he compliments the lamb that has just come out, which whoever would or could, lamb is so gross. Moving on.
Oh, I sort of miss lamb.
Oh, really? Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. But, and also, that didn't look overcooked to me.
No, it was pink. It looked fine.
Yeah.
She clearly was just needling him to be an asshole because she's Felice. Moving on. Yeah. After dinner, Donna walks Rocky 2 with Ray to avoid going back in and spending more time with her horrible mother. Ray knows that he didn't win over Felice, but says he liked Dr. Martin. But he doesn't care about either of them, really, since he's not dating them. He's dating Donna, and he knows he really only needs to get the approval of Rocky 2. Aw, true. And when Donna comes home, Claire and David are tearing up the apartment looking for this air check tape that she left at her parents' house. Stuff after dark. Donna creeps back in, nervously trying to grab the tape, which she claims Claire and David need for their class. And she has this exchange with Dr. Martin in clip 11.
Looking for this.
Hi, Dad. Yeah, thanks. Did you watch that?
I tried. All I got was a lot of static.
Oh, well, we're going to have a machine looked at.
Good idea. Give David my best.
Thanks, Dad. Mm-hmm. A lot.
You owe me. Big time.
All right, that was a little creepy, but still funny, other than the fucking attitude of Dr. Martin towards his daughter's ex-boyfriend.
Well, but I have to say, Tori Spelling actually brought the stuff.
She did.
This time. That she's like, did you watch that? Like, she had, it actually worked. Like, she was directed properly. Good job.
She was. Yes, agree. Before Donna leaves, Felice wants to talk to her, and Donna asks her to save it, saying she knows that Felice doesn't like Ray, but Donna does, and they have this discussion in clip 12.
Yeah, but honey, what about Griffin? He's such a nice young man.
Right. Yeah, Griffin's a real gentleman. He waited to the second date before he tried to get me to go to bed with him. Sweet dreams, Mom.
Ooh, yikes.
Yeah, well...
I also like that she told Felice because she's friends with Griffin's mom. And if anyone were going to say something about that to his mom, it would be Felice, unless Mrs. Stone outranks her in society. But who knows? So at the Pruitt house, Mrs. Pruitt is thirsty for details. To start, he reports that the house is north of Sunset because, of course, it is. There was real silver on the table. There was an army of servants. And Ray closes by lying that Donna's parents were nice to him, which, I mean... guess it's only half a lie because her dad was.
Yeah, exactly. One half was nice to them.
Moving on to the A story. Everyone loves Dylan like crazy. So,
Jesus Christ.
Here we go. Very loud generic music pounds as Dylan is passed out with a waste paper basket between his legs. I don't know. There's a gif on the in the visual aids, though.
It's for barfin.
Poor Cindy pounds on the door, eventually waking him up, and she's alarmed. If it's for barfing, is that what you said?
I didn't even see it on first pass. So okay. Where was it?
It was between his legs. He's lying on the couch and it's like on his side between his legs. So I would think it was a barf bucket, except you put that on the floor. You don't put it anyway. Whatever. Why am I overthinking this? Poor
That's
Cindy.
How far downward he's curly-cued, Tara.
Fair enough. Cindy pounds on the door, eventually waking him up, and she's alarmed and disgusted at the look of him, rightly, because he really looks bad. She would have called, but she didn't think he would talk to her and asked to come in since there's still a little trace of, and since there's still a trace of the old Dylan left in him, he lets her. And this is the first time she's ever been to his house, which, as she says it, she's sort of marveling at it, but it's true. It's kind of crazy that it's season five and it's taken this long. He apologizes for the state of the place, makes room for her on the shitty futon. She asks how he is and tells him he's not alone. She and Jim feel it's time for them all to start over. Jim even stayed home from work so he could talk to Dylan. Dylan grunts that he has a phone, and then Cindy turns on the mom guilt in clip 13.
Please, Dylan, I have asked you for very few favors along the way, but I am asking now. Please, just come back to the house with me.
Why are you doing this?
Because I care about you. We care.
I do like that she evokes their history, because she's right. Whenever she has asked him to do something, he always does it. Like he still loves her on some level and respects her and like wishes she was his mom. Like he wishes Jim were her dad, his dad. So it's good that she's only like deployed that very sparingly, because she could really abuse it and she knows that it's going to work, and it does. And I will also say it's very lame that things ended so badly between the show and Shannon Doherty, because busting out a surprise Brenda for this intervention would have been the best.
Oh my God, totally.
And would have made story sense too. Like, this is the thing that gets me back from England, your health. And it might have actually worked if she'd been there. Spoiler alert. Dylan asked
again. I will say though that like they, for all the times that she was referred to in the end of the last episode, they don't even mention her.
It's weird that they don't. Yes.
But I think it's better, because otherwise it would be this total Chrissy Snow, like, she's listening in by a speakerphone. Like, she's that's not a thing.
She sent a telegram for us to read, like at a wedding or something. Anyway, Dylan asks to get cleaned up, and because Cindy has never watched Intervention, because it doesn't exist yet, she lets him. And of course, he goes into the bathroom, takes out a foil wrapper full of white powder, and snorts some off a key. Cool. Cindy then brings home a grubby Dylan who didn't even bother to change his disgusting t-shirt and surely stinks so bad. When Cindy asks him into the living room, he sees that literally everyone is there except Jesse, who's like supposedly on the inside but did not get invited, and Val and Claire, which I guess makes sense. The interventionist is Ellen Marks. Just kidding. She's Mackenzie Phillips, who, once again, to correct the record, is not currently dead, even though I keep thinking that she is. She tries to explain what they want to do, but Dylan is predictably hostile, and Ellen claims it took a lot of time and effort to get everyone there, as if she didn't just round all of them up from their usual dicking around at the peach pit. Also, I think she got new teeth sometime between when she was on One Day at a Time and now, because they are big. You can see
yeah, this is like
kids.
Cap's version iteration number one.
Yeah.
And then there was another one on Celebrity Rehab. Ooh. They just keep getting bigger. It's like that Caribbean legend, how you can identify ghosts by their long teeth.
Yeah. It's not quite to Trump child level of Caps, but they're big. Dylan finally agrees to try them to let them try to intervent, but does so dickishly in clip 14.
This better be good. Better be entertaining. And I'm leaving.
Well, stay near the door is my advice, because yeah. It's season
Promise.
Five. None of this is very good or entertaining. Ellen asks who wants to start. Three guesses who goes first. Two don't count. Clip 16.
15.
You know, partner.
Oh,
look,
I'm sorry. You're
Dylan,
right. 15.
You might have given up on your...
Sorry.
You all done?
Yes.
Look, Dylan, you might have given up on yourself, but I'm here for a very selfish reason. You
Shocker.
Saved my life once. We were up on a mountain when we were camping that time. You remember?
Yeah, I remember. So what?
So when I see you getting all boozed up and all geezed up on coke or whatever you're killing yourself with, I can't help thinking, what's going to happen next time if you're not there?
You fall off the mountain. Come on to save your business, Brandon.
Yeah, well, I can't agree with you on that one, Dylan. Did you forget about the little incident that happened over at the beach apartment? I was wasted on meth. Cops were banging on the door. You saved me then.
Look, David buried a friend in high school. Brandon just buried another one. Dylan, we don't want to bury you.
So put your shovels
Speak for yourself,
away, because nobody's dying here, all right? I'm fine.
You're not fine.
I'm fine.
People who get high and play with guns are not fine.
Brandon is the worst. I mean,
also, it's an intervention. Button your fucking shirt to the top.
Yeah. Also,
his chest hair got a SAG card in this scene. It's so gross.
And lose the tude. You're supposed to be saving his life. Stop acting like it's such an imposition on you, you fucking asshole. Anyway, Brandon is terrible. Val, excused from the intervention, is at Century City Plaza, one of my favorite LA area malls. Good call, Val. She's window shopping when Claire comes out of a store, greeting her in a friendly way, which is hilarious yet fitting. Claire has no reason to be mad at her on behalf of Steve or Dylan at this point. So they shop and chat about their backgrounds and about the intervention they're not at. Val apparently discussed it with Brandon and they agreed she shouldn't go since she doesn't know Dylan that well, except biblically, which Claire knows. But when Val says they just hung out a couple of times, Claire lets it pass. Val then admits that she wasn't invited and Claire says they're not members of the club yet. God, count your blessings.
You are, seriously,
you
shop
are,
like the wind.
You're better off. The rest of the club is having their airing of grievances with Dylan. The interventionist Ellen platitudes that Dylan hasn't hurt anyone as much as he's hurt himself. And Nat's like, actually, clip 16.
You know, partner, I can forgive almost anything except stealing. You don't think I noticed the night you told Steve his count was off? When we closed the peach pit after dark. That you would steal from me after everything we've been through.
I'll pay you back, Nat.
That's too late for that. You better get your head screwed on straight and fast. If you keep going like you're going, you're gonna die.
I'm not gonna die. I'm not gonna die.
Don't thread me.
The tone on the last one. I'm not gonna die. Sounds like a 4-year-old. But also, at this point, isn't Dylan still officially an investor in the Peach Pit? Like, he's stealing from Nat, yes, but isn't he kind of also just stealing from himself? I'm just asking.
And also, since when do you fucking care whether the count is right? You're just giving away hamburgers for free like they grow on trees.
Yup. Ellen begs Dylan to listen, but Dylan says he's leaving, and Steve is like, fine, Dylan sucks. Clip 17.
Personally, I think this is a huge waste of time. Drunk or sober, I still think my good buddy Dylan McKay would have found some way to hit on Valerie.
Come on, Steve, look.
No, you look. I don't think you're worth the bottle you're trying to crawl out of, pal. And if you're not going to leave, then I am.
What, you think that's the way I wanted it, man? It was all her fault. I told her I didn't want you to get hurt in there.
Oh, well, that's very big of you.
Steve, go back in there and sit down. If you stay, I'll stay. I'll listen.
I mean, why?
That seems unlikely is A.
Yeah.
B, Steve can't sit down. His jeans are incredibly tight and it will cut off circulation to the penis he is trying to make look gigantic. Fairly successfully, it's in the visual aids.
Also, they keep trying to, like, I don't know why Steve's opinion of him would be the one that turns the tide for Dylan, but they keep trying to make us believe over the course of the season or the series that Dylan and Steve care about each other. And I literally never have bought that at all. Like, I think that they've been thrown together by circumstance because they have a ton of friends in common, but like, I don't think they particularly like each other or have anything in common.
Even after the "you crud" incident, which isn't mentioned here, and that's another instance in which Saint Dylan, when he wasn't impregnating a Frenchie, saved one of the gang's bacon, but not mentioned. And I agree. I don't think they really like each other.
I mean, especially not at this point, given the Val incident. But anyway, moving on.
Exactly.
Donna's turn. She tells Dylan that in high school she thought of him as a big brother until he crashed her mother's fundraiser when she lost a lot of respect for him. She doesn't want to remember him that way, and he says she should remember him as the guy who drove over the next day to apologize, and she reminds him that he promised that day that he was going to meet her at registration and then never showed up. Dylan says he had his own reasons not to go back to school, and at this point, they all know he's broke, so being broke is a good reason to not be going to college? Just saying. I know it's only a state school, but still. But Andrea takes over here to fluff him about his passion and intellect, stifled by the drugs he's been on. Also, clip 18.
I guess that's why you never came by to see Hannah.
Okay.
That's not why.
There are lots of reasons. Anyway.
Send us all to NA then, because your fucking baby's boring. Print it.
Dylan says that he's been busy. Oh, Dylan, that excuse only works for a very short time. And then you've got to see the baby. Oh, fuck. And then Kelly decides it's her turn in clip 19. Oh.
Look, Dylan, I know we didn't have the easiest time together. But at least when you were sober, you had more dignity than the guy I found licking salt off the neck of a glorified hooker. What, did you do that to humiliate me? To pay me back for falling in love with someone else? Because if you did, it worked. I was humiliated.
At this point, you'd been broken up for months, so I doubt it was about you probably much at all.
Well, and even if it was a glorified hooker, isn't that less humiliating?
Right. That's a good point.
Not more?
Yeah.
Also, you hated each other. Why are you even here? She seriously looks like she's late for something else this whole time.
She does. Dylan asks to go to the bathroom, and Ellen lets him go because I guess he's going to do something, she can't stop him, or that's the next chump's problem. But in the bathroom, Dylan is about to do another key snort, but changes his mind at the last second and puts his tiny stash back in his pocket instead. And Dylan comes back out to ask what's next, informing them that he's not going to beg their forgiveness. Ellen says that they've packed him a bag and that there's a bed waiting in a very good hospital. Dylan says he'll go to meetings and talk to people, but he refuses to consider inpatient treatment. And Ellen is not sure he can help himself, whereupon Dylan gets cocky for a second in clip 20.
Is that what you want, all of you? Are you sure? Can you fix my problem? Because I can do that. I can go to rehab. I can do 2 weeks in rehab, standing on my head. But what you got to be ready for is a result of your little experiment when I get out, because you know what I think you're going to see? I think you're going to see that you all need me to be sick. Yeah, because that way, you look a lot better. See, your lives, they all look perfect and shiny, but only compared to my pathetic little existence, right? Well, I'm sick of giving you the satisfaction. Yeah, I'll go. Grab the bag.
Sad clarinet. All right, Sarah, you watch and cover Intervention for us at previously.tv. Can you untangle the logic thread of that speech of his?
Not really. Because, yeah, I feel like that's a total TV land thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, you've watched probably almost as much Intervention as I have, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know when you gave up on the show, but like, sometimes they're defiant and they stomp out and they send that one person who's like, come on, just try it. Mm-hmm. Other times, like, they've been waiting for someone to be like, it's fine, you just can't handle it anymore, just give up. Mm-hmm. And then there's crying, and then they go, they're relieved. But like, it's not really like, the thing that struck me about this speech is like, you all need me to be sick. Like, that's not something the actual sick intervenee ever really says at that point. Like, that's definitely recovery speak, but it wouldn't be coming from him.
Right.
I guess he's been in AA before, but I don't know. Like, the whole thing is like really a mess. And also, all these people really hate each other. Yeah. And where's Iris? I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, she'd have come and brought some crystals and tried to help.
I mean, I guess now that he's broke, he can't buy her a ticket and she can't afford it because she makes frond hats on the beach or whatever the fuck she does. But
frond hats. Love it.
It's a real thing.
New t-shirt. Iris's frond hat hut.
Yeah.
The whole thing was sort of like, granted, they didn't know any better. And maybe that was considered like a, you know, secret, and they didn't want to do it too realistically. But I just felt like, for a, you know, famous sober person to be hired to be the interventionist, like, let the interventionist intervene.
Yeah.
Just seemed like an excuse to give Brandon a bunch of shitty speeches. So next.
Yeah. All right. So when we see Dylan next, he's tucked into bed while his cheerful roommate busily makes his bed. And there's a knock at the door for breakfast. If you miss it, you don't eat. Dylan is too punk rock for all of this in clip 21.
What'd you say your name was?
Everybody Kirk. Up. Breakfast call.
Yeah. Listen, Kirk, I've been to AA before. I know the drill. Okay? So where can I get a paper around here?
Sorry, pal. No papers, no phones, no TV. Got the big book, though, if you're looking for something to read.
No, thanks. I'm going to wait for the movie.
Ah, funny drunk. Yeah, we like those around here. Livens up the place a bit. You do drink, don't you?
Yeah, among other things.
Me, I'd start off with a fifth of vodka. Sometimes tequila. Sometimes gin. Whatever. Then when my inhibitions were thoroughly cooked...
Kirk, shut up. You know what I mean?
I kind of with Dylan.
Seriously, Kirk, you're not in group.
We're not. You're an under five. We don't care about your backstory. We're never going to see you again. I assume. So Dylan comes to see a Dr. Parker about signing himself out literally his first morning in rehab, and Dr. Parker immediately starts shrinking him in clip 22.
Oh, I see. And why is that?
If I have any problems, I'll just handle them by myself.
Your friends tell me you walk around like a zombie half the time. That's not a normal life for someone as bright and talented as you.
What is normal?
Give it a chance, Dylan. Just one more day. Because if you don't, we both know it's only a matter of time till you wind up dead or in jail or in an institution.
We both know everybody winds up somewhere.
You know what it's like out there, Dylan. It's not going to get any better.
I'll take my chances.
Okay. You signed yourself in, you can sign yourself out.
That's right.
It seems like he would try to prove the point by staying for more than a day, but I guess he just is really.
Yeah, or that he would sneak out.
Yeah. This is all dumb. Valerie shows up with a tin of something for Dylan, but he rolls up behind the receptionist at this moment on his way out. Val is concerned that he's doing the right thing. Dylan just wants a ride, and Val agrees, but with a desperate backward glance. And then Cindy's on the phone, freaking out at someone for letting Dylan out. Did she call them, the hospital? Because Dylan isn't supposed to get phone calls, we just heard. And did they call her? Why, if Dylan has the power to sign himself out? Sarah? Why?
I assumed it was because she was paying.
Oh.
So if he leaves, then they call her and they're like, do you want your deposit back? Like, I don't actually know how that works.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that. I just figured he was still on some kind of insurance, but how could he be? He cannot pay for it. Jim tells Cindy that they did everything they could and it'll never be enough. It's the day after the intervention, guys. Maybe give it a little time. Whatever. Never is a long time. Val has brought Dylan back to his house where he takes delivery of Chinese food with a six-pack of beer in the bag. Val makes a snitty remark about it, and Dylan gets defensive, saying he thought she would be cool with it, and tries to distract her with sexual overtures. But she's not there to watch him get drunk. He tells her she can leave, but she's also horny, so she decides to stay. And they're making out when the phone rings. He ignores it, which is when we hear, Dave, I'm calling attention to this moment for you. Dun. Dylan has a new outgoing message. Clip 23.
Leave a message, sucker.
What a douche.
Oh my God, so stupid.
I think the actual sucker is the so-called rich guy who hasn't upgraded to voicemail. Am I right? Jones?
Yeah. It is Cindy calling. They are worried about him. Sometime later, Dylan is wasted and gross. His shirt is unbuttoned, is buttoned up wrong, just so to make sure you know he's really out of it. Val challenges him on handling his liquor, and he's not happy that she's counting his drinks. He tells her to shut up or get out. She follows him to the phone and watches him beep his dealer, because it's the 90s. Beepers! Val wasn't sure if everyone had the right idea about the intervention and thought they went too far. She also says she told Brandon to mind his own business, which, why didn't we get to see that scene? Anyway, Valerie tells Dylan that he needs help. The phone rings and she begs him not to answer, but he does. It's the dealer, and Val finally decides to leave. At the Peach Pit, Nat hangs up the phone. Cindy's just called him to tell him that Dylan checked himself out of rehab. And Dylan goes straight to the pool hall to buy drugs from John Gray's. There's an economic issue in clip 24.
So, little nine ball cover the freight there?
Oh, man, sorry. I don't gamble. Except with my life. You know, man, I got a little something special tonight. I don't know if you'd be interested in it.
What you got?
You ever chase a dragon?
Heroin?
Yeah. Smoke a little bit makes coming in from a snowstorm
pop rocks. Easier to take.
How much? Well,
Here. There's a little sample on me. Enjoy your pool game.
Oh, God.
I mean, not how drug dealers talk. Not that I know. I do. It's not how they talk. And what is with the music in the background of that scene? I love this, like, average white band, like, when is this pool hall? Because also, there's more B-roll in this episode that is clearly from the 70s.
Oh,
there's,
yeah,
like, 14 Pintos in an outdoor shot. Yes. Guys, you're a spelling program. You can afford B-roll.
Mm-hmm.
Go shoot some from this century.
I will say, props to the great John Gray's for making the most of this role, which is a very nothing rote part, but he is still really good in it. I love that actor.
Yeah,
he's great.
It is always nice to see a professional.
It is. Val then comes back home to the Walsh house lying that she was at a movie to get the quote news unquote about Dylan, including that no one knows where he is, meaning no one even tried to drive back by his house. So good job, Nancy's Drew. Val sucks her cheeks. Kelly is on to her, but Val sticks to her official story in clip 25.
We're just worried about him.
Well, maybe it's time to stop worrying. I mean, there's only so much you can do for somebody. If he doesn't want your help, it's his problem, don't you think?
She's right.
Face it. Dylan's life is in his own hands now. And there's nothing any of us can say or do that'll change that.
Really final for the intervention having been yesterday again, but I guess the point is he has to hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Also, that's very subtle, Valerie. Totally buying that you went to a movie.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the next morning, Dylan is sleeping in his car on Mulholland or something when the sun comes up. He looks like he's not sure how he got there and chucks a beer bottle off the passenger seat, then pulls out his dragon chasing gear. We have to watch for fucking ever while he prepares to smoke it, though the camera hilariously stays at the back of his head while he does it, so that, again, we don't know exactly how drugs work, thanks to the show. But don't worry, everyone. Traffic is only a few years away, and Erica Christensen will show us all what we're missing here. Even more hilariously, a cop car happens to roll up just as Dylan is inhaled, but it doesn't stop because even the cops don't care if Dylan kills himself. Dylan is high as fuck as he pulls onto the road and ends up driving through a fence and down the hill. Oh no, is Dylan gonna die? Probably.
End of episode. Awful, like, stunts
so
of
bad.
TV. So terrible. That he's like, like, you know when kids get in a car, like 5-year olds, the first thing you do is grab the wheel, like crank it around, like that's what driving is. It's just like wrenching the wheel.
Yeah.
This is literally what Luke Perry was directed to do. And it's clear the car is going tops 8 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. So
but
that's
he's definitely
it.
Dead for sure. Definitely,
for sure.
Totally
we will never see
dead.
Dylan again. Definitely. Yay! Oh my God. There's so much more terrible coming in the next episode. I can't even think about it. So instead, let's close this one up with our MVP. Sarah, who's your pick?
I'm pretty sure you know who it is. Reseda. Elise. I mean, she's terrible. She's a terrible person.
Yeah. She's love fun her. To watch. So fun to watch. I would love to give it to my usual standby, Jackie, except for her no chill performance in the editor's office at 17.
Yeah.
So instead, I'm going to give it to Cindy because she tried and she was sincere.
That's true.
And she's lovely. Love Cindy.
That's true.
So that's my pick. Least valuable player.
Oh.
The interventionist. I would say she is not that effective, personally.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Lisa. Don't fucking encourage this, Lisa.
That's a good pick too. There's a great gif of her in the visual aids, by the way, if I do say so myself, of her reaction to Jackie's one of her speeches about her glory days, and she just gives this like very small but very effective eye roll, like enough already, right before she kicks her Chris Jennering ass out of the office. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a nice piece of business from that actress. Well done, lady.
It is. Let's finish with the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Just five? Let's see if we can keep it to that. Well, it's bad not to know how to work a shirt. That's one.
Throwing a beer bottle out of your car to land right next to it and shatter, you're going to get a flat tire. That's bad and dangerous.
Great point. It's definitely bad to show up the Walsh house in a stinky t-shirt.
Braying at Steve. This is proven dangerous to you in a recent episode. Maybe
so true.
Calm down.
And of course, the ultimate, really dangerous to drive when you're just coming off or have just smoked heroin because you're going to drive down a fence and maybe kill yourself or maybe end up in a terrible coma. That makes five.
Just in time, because here comes the boy. Tree trimmer.
Next time on Again With This, we've said it before and we'll say it again. Nobody fucking cares about the crazy dream you had last night. Especially if it's an overwrought heroin coma affair in the self-serious subconscious of California's most pretentious stick insect. Also, Rush Sanders something blah, who cares? You should rush to see all the visual aids for this episode and all the other episodes of Again With This on our website at previously.tv, which you can also follow on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Fishfork Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host Tara Ariano owes you big time, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is keeping up with the Joneses. You can find him on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Leave a message, sucker.
Yay!
David! But in a good way.
Hooray!
Oh, God.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.